I'm speaking today with John Courage, who is the Democratic nominee for the State Senate in District 25, which is anchored in Bexar County, San Antonio. John, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Well, I decided to run because I really feel that the state has let down our education system, our children, our future generations. And I'm a teacher, and I have been for 21 years. I've also served on the board of a community college district. And I value public education, and I know most Texans really do. And what we've seen in the legislature the last couple of sessions, I think, is an abandonment of the support of public education in this state. And I want to go to Austin and fight to ensure the future education of all of our children, including my own grandchildren.
Okay. And now you've run for Congress, I believe, twice. What would you say you have learned from that experience and also from the experience of serving on a community college board?
Well, running for Congress, both occasions, really was a learning experience, and that I came to understand a lot of the underlying things that need to be done to become elected. I also learned a lot about how people view the electoral process and what people expect from a candidate, what they expect from a public official. I think I've learned the importance of not talking to people in your own party, but talking to everybody to get their input. You know, politics and government particularly has to be a collaborative effort. And even though I'm a Democrat, and I have been and I will continue to be, I recognize the importance of listening to and talking with everybody to have a better understanding of everyone's concerns and needs, so as an elected official, you know how to address those concerns and needs. Yeah, I started learning that when I was on the school board, but the races for Congress really emphasized to me the importance of listening and talking with people and understanding what they expect from their elected leaders.
Well, and you bring that up. I mean, you're running in a district that was drawn to elect a Republican, but in the primary, the Republican voters threw out the longstanding incumbent senator, Jeff Wentworth, in favor of, you know, a Tea Party newcomer, Donna Campbell. You know, I think it's fair to say that for you to win this race, you're going to have to win a fairly significant number of votes from, you know, people who are Republicans, who, you know, probably would have supported Senator Wentworth, and maybe don't find the alternative to him that their own party has given them to be terribly appealing. How do you do that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, you know, how do you go about doing that? How are you reaching out to people like that?
Well, I think you really need to have a pretty clear understanding of who your voters are, where they're coming from, and how you can reach them. And what we've tried to do is look at the background information of the history of the voters in our district. And from that, you can kind of define who are the hardcore supporters for either party, whether it's Republican or Democratic, and then who are the people that aren't so committed that they don't vote based on who they feel is the right person for them. And that's a very significant part of our district. Really, what we found is, in basic numbers, the voting history has been a 60, 61, 62, 63% Republican turnout to a, you know, 37 to a 40% Democratic turnout in the district. But part of the cause of that we've been able to determine is simply the people in this district haven't had many choices to vote for strong Democratic candidates. You've had, for example, Lamar Smith, who you mentioned I ran against twice, who has been over a 20-year incumbent in that position. And Jeff Wentworth, who was just defeated, was a 20-year incumbent in his position. And two overlying state representative districts that encompass many of this area in Bexar County were long-term Republican incumbents in those positions, like Frank Court. And so unless you've got strong Democratic candidates challenging those 20-year incumbents, most of your voters are going to just generally vote Republican in those elections. And, you know, that's been the history, and that's why we've had pretty much a 60-40 split for quite a while. But when you really get down deep and look at the hardcore voters, you find that there is a large number of Republicans, nearly as big a number of Democrats, but there's even a larger swath of voters who don't vote hardcore Democrat, don't vote hardcore Republican, but always vote in November. And that's the target audience that really swing the elections year in and year out. And they've been voting mostly Republican, but we've determined that if we can get 60% of that vote in this election, along with the Democratic vote, we can win this race. We're also hoping that, you know, there's going to be a little bit of fall off from the traditional Republican vote in this district, because their new nominee, Donna Campbell, is really a fringe right-wing candidate that, even though she won this primary runoff against an incumbent, doesn't understand the district, is new to the district. People don't know her. I think she won mostly because of the Senate race that really gathered a lot of attention between Cruz and Dewhurst. And there was just a lot of excitement among the Tea Partiers that they had the Senate candidate at the top, and it brought them out in large numbers across the state, really, in a lot of different smaller races, Senate and House. And those races were affected by that large number of Tea Party vote, you know, for the Senate. And that cause really Wentworth the race. But I don't see that number growing much beyond what it did as far as the solid Tea Party vote. So the rest of the vote out there, I think, is wide open for the taking. Okay. And for once, in three elections, this being the third one I'm involved in right now, I'm not running against a 20-year incumbent. And I think that makes even a larger difference.
Okay. Now, at the start of this conversation, you talked about working to fight for public education. I think what that ultimately comes down to is the fact that there hasn't been enough revenue. The tax swap that was put in place in 2006, the sources of funding that were supposed to replace revenue lost to the property tax, just hasn't, you know, the business margins tax just hasn't done it. So what do you think needs to be done, you know, to fix this problem?
Well, you know, I've been talking to people in small businesses and asking them, you know, how they feel about, you know, state regulations in general, but also the margin tax. I think we really do need to reform the margin tax, and it's from several different directions. I think we need to broaden the base, but at the same time, I think it's become complex and cumbersome for many of the industries and businesses that are paying into it. And I think it needs to be, you know, like I said, broadened but simplified to a certain extent. But I think even more than the margin tax, which is a real big problem, right now Texas is coming out of the recession that the country's been in. And the forecasts going forward to the next legislative session that are being brought out through the comptroller's office is that the revenue is already increasing in the state. And it's predicted that by the end of this biennium that we're in right now, there'll be about $7 billion in additional income that was not forecast. $7 billion. On top of that, there are several billion dollars that are pouring into the rainy day fund because we have had such a growth in the oil and gas industry in Texas in the last two or three years. I think we're all very well aware of that in South Texas, all of the shale gas and oil that's being produced. And so that fund is growing beyond expectations. So, you know, we may not have to look at the issue of creating more revenue as much as dedicating the revenue that we have got coming in to restore the funding to public education that was cut, and ensure that we address additional funding for the continued growth in the student population. And I think that's very doable. I think a lot of people are starting to open their eyes to the fact that our economy is growing at a significantly enough growth rate that there should not be cuts. And that's what I want to fight for, is the restoration of the money that was cut and the additional funding that will be needed to meet the growth of the student population in Texas. I think part of the problem is we've been looking at the past and we've been concerned about meeting obligations of the past, and we're not looking at education into the future. And I think that that's something else we need to do, and that it doesn't always necessarily mean more funding, but it certainly means you can't take funding away.
Now, having served on the board of the community college, I mean, you know, public education has gotten a lot of the attention, but, you know,
right.
public higher education and community colleges have been really hit by the budget cuts as well. What do you see as the needs for higher education in this state, and how would you like to address them?
Well, I think that we've made mistakes in the legislature when we have kind of unbridled the individual college systems to set their own rates instead of the state underwriting higher education. And that's been a real problem. And the best way I can describe my concern about it is when I look at my own family history. I've got four adult children, and three of them were in college at the same time about 15 years ago, and my wife and I were contributing to the education of three of our college students, and then another one went in a little while after that. And we were able to successfully help them get through college with loans and the money that we put in, and of course they worked for themselves. But now we've looked at the same colleges, the same structure of education that our children went through 15 years ago, and we've said to ourselves, we could not afford to put our children through college today because of the tremendous growth in the cost of public education. And I think that, you know, there's been national errors that have been made and state errors that have been made in supporting higher education. And I think that state needs to contribute more revenue to support public higher education so that more people have a chance to compete in the international marketplace for employment that we face now. Texas has got the second largest economy in the country. It's rated in the top dozen economies in the world. If we're going to compete that way, then we need to be producing students with the top education possible for them to compete in that kind of a world economy.
Let's talk about health care and Medicaid. As you know, the Affordable Care Act was upheld by the Supreme Court, but they allowed states to opt out of Medicaid expansion, which Governor Perry has said is his intention for Texas. What do you think the effect of that will be?
Well, I think it would be a disaster. Already we know that we've cut funding in the last couple of legislative sessions out of our health care program, so there are more children without health care now in Texas than there were before. As a matter of fact, we have the largest number of uninsured children and adults in the country here in Texas. And I think that's just going to create more of a financial burden on all of the rest of us if we don't bring in this federal money that's being provided through the Affordable Care Act. I am committed to fight to bring the Affordable Care Act to Texas. It isn't simply a decision by the governor. He may say he's against it, but it's going to take legislative action to bring it into Texas. He could go ahead and veto a bill, but the legislature can override that veto. So it is up to the Texas legislature to decide on that. And, you know, the reports I've read from the Texas Department of Health and Human Services anticipate that we could bring into Texas over the next 10 years as much as $162 billion, billion with a B. That is a tremendous amount of money from the federal government into health care in a state. Not only will it provide better health care for just tens of thousands of Texans who have no health care at all, but I think even more significantly, it is going to provide jobs for thousands of people in Texas, because we're going to have to expand the healthcare services. That'll mean more doctors, more healthcare providers, whether they're nurses or other clinicians. It also means that everybody in the healthcare industry, as it grows, are going to be spending, are earning their money and spending their money in local economies all across this state. That means businesses, whether it's a cafe or a clothing store or a specialty service, is going to receive income from the people who buy those products or those services. That means the state is going to bring in more revenue through sales taxes. It is absolutely a win-win-win situation for Texas. Better health care, better income coming into the state, better revenue to state government. That means that we need to participate in the program to the tune of 60 $16 billion of our taxpayers' money. But that's a 10-to-1 payback. You know, we cannot lose in this. Many people over the years have complained that Texas gives much more money to the federal government than it gets back in services. Well, this is one way to turn the tables, by paying in $16 million to help improve the health care of the people in our own state. We're going to get $160-something billion back. You know, that's a tremendous return on our investment.
I mean, San Antonio has a pretty big medical center in it as well. What are you hearing from people in that community about the Affordable Care Act and bringing it to Texas?
You know, a lot of people in the healthcare industry are all for it. You know, you're getting hospitals and a lot of specialized medical services, be they residential treatment centers and rehabilitation centers and even home health care professional organizations, all of them see the benefit of this service coming in. You know, in Bexar County, we pay a hospital tax, as they do in many of the major metropolitan areas around Texas, and a huge amount of that money, and in Bexar County, I believe it's nearly a quarter of a $1 billion, $250 million, is used to supplement our hospital district to pay for the services of indigent people who cannot pay for those services themselves. And if we do not accept this money, that simply continues to grow and become a greater tax burden on local taxpayers who pay into that hospital district fund. This kind of money can offset a lot of the costs that the hospitals have to absorb and pass on to the taxpayers. So it would actually have a positive effect on the tax basis that people have to pay on their homes. I can't see why people would vote or would not want to bring that money into Texas when it would actually help save them tax dollars.
Okay. Let's talk briefly about transportation. I mean, Bexar County and Travis County, much like Harris County, they've got growing populations and highways that are kind of overburdened. Toll roads have been part of the solution in and around Bexar County. But TxDOT, and one reason for that is because TxDOT is projected to run out of money to build new roads. What do you think, what are your priorities for transportation?
You know, I really feel that we need to look at alternatives to the structure of having toll roads around Bexar County, and I think the same goes in a lot of other places. Yeah, I believe that if we have built roads, that those roads were paid for with taxpayers' funds. They're there to service the community, and I can't see changing an existing road into a toll road. And I've fought against that, and many people in Bexar County have fought against that. However, we understand that transportation needs are growing, and we do need to address those. Part of what we need to do is to stop taking dedicated funds like money from the gasoline tax and delivering it to other or services or other parts of our economy in the state. You know, we've been diverting money from funds for years and years, and I think that's been to the detriment of transportation, which is what the gas tax was originally established for. And also, I think that we need to look at alternatives to building entirely new roads. In San Antonio, for example, along 281, a major thoroughfare north-south, they've devised some what they call super turn lanes that allow for traffic flow to be improved, and it's made a difference in how the traffic flow is going in some of those highly congested areas. And I say that, you know, toll roads could be a solution, but not for existing roads. Toll roads should be a solution for newly constructed roads in alternative routes. You know, for example, you can take the trip from San Antonio up to Dallas. They built some toll roads around Austin, entirely new roads, and I can see tolling those roads until they are paid off and then ending the toll. part of the problem is, though, once you start a toll on a road, it never goes away. It just becomes another revenue stream to the government. And, you know, I don't want to see that happen. But there are other alternatives. I think I'd love to see high-speed rail. You know, we should have a Texas Triangle. It should go from Dallas to Houston to San Antonio, back up to Dallas, right through Austin. That would make a tremendous difference in transportation in our state. But, you know, that's a battle that the legislature has not been willing to fight.
Okay. And, I mean, District 25, I mean, it is anchored in Bexar County, but it runs up to Travis and it encompasses some areas that are, you know, now partly suburban and partly rural. How do you balance, you know, the needs of the, you know, ex-urban and rural areas in a district like this with those of, you know, the highly urban San Antonio?
You know, you really have to consider what the people throughout the district have to say as far as what their interests and concerns are, and you've got to kind of put it all into the mix. I live in San Antonio and in Bexar County, and it is a very urbanized area, but I've traveled throughout this district over the years. I've lived actually within the confines of Senate District 25 itself for 25 years. And so I've grown to know and understand a lot of the needs and the concerns of the people who live in the smaller communities. You can take small communities outside of San Antonio, places like Bull Verde or Spring Branch, or you can take destination communities in this area like Canyon Lake or Wimberley in Hays County. And if you get to meet the people and talk with them and learn to understand what their concerns and needs are, they can adequately be addressed in the legislature through collaboration, an understanding that we all share certain basic needs and functions that government needs to meet, and then there are specific individualized ones that need to be addressed, and there's, I think, common sense solutions to meeting all of those. One thing we all share is the importance of public education. Another thing we all share is the importance of having an environment that will provide clean air and clean water and good earth to till to create healthy foods. And those are urban and suburban and rural concerns. Rurally, it's a matter of agriculture and supporting agriculture. And in the urban areas, it's the fact that you want to have clean air to breathe and good water to drink. All of those needs can be, I think, met as people work collaboratively together. And I think I have the ability to do that. And I've talked to a lot of people in this district over the years, and I think we all share, you know, the mutual concerns of improving the quality of life while not taxing one group too much or depriving another too much of the basics that they expect to have in the way of services from their government.
You mentioned water a couple of times. I mean, this district covers like the Edwards Aquifer, and it's a fast-growing area in Central Texas that, you know, where the population is starting to outstrip the ability to provide water for it. You know, Texas has long-term water plans, but as always, the problem is paying for it. What do you want to see done for Texas' long-term water needs, in particular for, you know, the needs of your district?
Well, you're very right about that, Charles, and that's something that a lot of people have been concerned about. We've had many water fights in the 25th Senatorial District over the years. You know, we've had fights to keep the springs flowing in the Comal River to protect, you know, endangered species and to provide water for recreation as well as, you know, the use of citizens and business. And we've been going through some long periods of drought. I have to commend some of the individual water districts that have come up over the last 10 or 20 years and some of the water companies, for example, right here in Sauz. You know, they're doing a good job of trying to find other sources of water that are underused in different parts of South Texas, Central Texas, you know, to bring those in to provide potable water, you know, for the large urban communities. And there's been, I think, strong moves on conservation. You've got people in the Hill Country, Hays County, Comal County, others around here that are, you know, using rainwater as a resource, which I think is valuable. But what we really haven't done beyond those conservation and outreach programs is, you mentioned that we do have a 50-year water plan that was developed, you know, nearly 20 years ago. when it was initially developed, the estimate of cost for that water plan, should it have been implemented by the legislature at that time, was about $23 billion. Today, that same water plan is valued at $50 billion in order to implement it. You know what? If we wait another 20 years, it may cost us $100 billion to implement that plan. You know, the leadership in Texas needs to start facing the reality that you've got to pay for the things that are really important. And, you know, few things are more important than water to people in Texas. And I think that we just need to start making the investment in providing better water resources. The water is there. It's how it can be found, how it can be developed, how it can be allocated. That's in the plan that we need to start funding.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November, why should they vote to make you the next senator in Senate District 25 and not your opponent?
Well, my opponent is a stranger to this district. She does not live here. Now, she has a residence. She rented a house in New Braunfels in the district so that she could run against the incumbent, but she actually still lives and works closer to you. She lives in Columbus. She works in Columbus in Colorado County. She's been there for years and years. She has a rent house in this district. She claims that as her residence. Well, that may qualify her to get on the ballot, but it does not qualify her to represent the interests of the people in our community. These are my neighbors. I've lived in Bexar County for over 4 years. I've lived in Senate District 25 for 25 years. I have lived here. I have worked here. I've raised my family in this district. My kids have gone to school in Austin and UT and in Hayes County, San Marcos at Southwest Texas at UTSA. You know, we have enjoyed living here. We've played here. We've prayed here. I've buried family members and friends in this community. So I understand what the needs and the concerns are of the 25th Senatorial District, and my opponent does not. And I think that is probably the most important thing that I'd like the people in our district to understand. Besides that, she does not support public education. She supports a voucher plan that would literally take $2 billion out of public education in Texas. She's also a doctor who, it amazes me that she believes that if a woman is raped and becomes pregnant, that woman, no matter what the circumstances, should be forced to bear that child by the government. And I think that is just outrageous, especially for someone who's a doctor. So she is so out of touch with the real concerns and interests of the people in this district that I hope that the more we can help them learn about her and learn about me and compare us as choices, that it'll be a simple choice for the voters in this district to vote for John Courage for the Texas Senate.
Okay. John Courage, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. It's been my pleasure.